The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and today we're going to be talking about why powerful men risk it all. So why would some powerful men like General David Petraeus cheat and risk so much? We're often puzzled when famous men who seem to have it all, like public acclaim, professional success, and a loving family, throw away their career, their marriage, and their reputation by having an affair. And ironically, these affairs rarely turn into long-lasting relationships. Fear of infidelity plagues many marriages today. And my guest this week on Family First is Terry Orbach, a PhD, a marriage expert, and director of a landmark 25-year National Institute of Health government-funded study of marriage and divorce. Popularly known as the Love Doctor, Dr. Orbach will explain how powerful men are especially vulnerable to common traps that jeopardize marriages. She'll share with us the five reasons why powerful men cheat and how power creates blind spots when it comes to self-scrutiny. Past president of the International Association for Relationship Research, Dr. Terry will give us some important insights into keeping a marriage safe and healthy. Terry Orbach is, as I said, a PhD, best-selling author, professor, and popular love advisor on TV, radio, and the web. She's a psychologist, a nationally known research scientist at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan, and also an Oakland University professor. Dr. Orbach has studied the marriage, divorce, romance, and relationship patterns of thousands of individuals nationwide over the past 25 years, and she blogs for Huffington Post and Next Avenue, among others, and has a 20-year marriage and family therapy practice in Detroit. Her newest book is Finding Love Again, Six Simple Steps to a New and Happy Relationship. She's also author of Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great and several other books. She has created Bedside Inspirations at a Glance books and Marriage Enrichment Workshops. Dr. Terry Orbach has published over 40 articles, been quoted in such national publications as USA Today, New York Times, Boston Globe, Reader's Digest, and now on Family First. So happy to have you here.
Thanks, Randy. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So I want to start out by asking your personal journey. How did you become interested in studying marriage and divorce, Dr. Terry?
Well, I've always been interested in relationships because relationships, we know from studies, are so vital to psychological and physical health. So when people are in happy relationships, they're less likely to be depressed and nervous, anxious, and physically, they're less likely to have headaches, better heart health, lower blood pressure, even more likely to live longer. So given that, I became interested in marriage per se and what keeps marriages together and what breaks them apart. And I started out being the director of a long-term project on marriage and divorce. We started with 373 couples, married couples, in 1986, and we've been following them now for over now 26 years, and it's funded by the National Institutes of Health. So, you know, just in the last 26 years then, with this great project, I became even more interested in marriage and divorce.
Oh, that's fascinating. May I ask, do you have a marriage?
I do. You can ask. I have been happily married for 20 years now, and I often tell my husband about the most interesting findings from the study, and so he's into the study as well. He could probably tell you as much as I could.
Oh, I love that. I love that. My husband and I have been married, I'll say over 35 years, and it's always growing. It's just wonderful to get that kind of input, and to talk about it with your spouse. So that's exciting. So tell us more about that study. So you followed these 73 couples. Did you interview them regularly, or what was the procedure?
Well, we started in 1986, and we got the couples from marriage licenses in the many counties where I live, and we sent letters to all the couples who got married in these counties during a three-month period of time. Both members of the couple had to agree to participate, and then we have been following them and regularly interviewing them in the last 26 years. And we interview them separately as husband and wife, as well as we do a couple interview. And during the couple interview, we do exercises. We have them talk about the last conflict they had. We even have them tell the story of their relationship from when they first met and became a couple, got married, honeymoon, and forward from there. So we have them do many interesting things, either separately or together. They are all face-to-face interviews, and they run between an hour and a half and 2 hours each. So we have really rich information, and we have that information over time. I should also say, Randy, that 46% of the couples divorced over time, which looks like the national average. The national average is about from 45 to 50%. And we still followed the divorced individuals once they got divorced. So I like to say now I've been following 746 individuals, some of whom are still married to one another and some of whom are no longer married to one another.
Oh, that's fascinating. So you really were able to explore what was breaking down as well as what was holding them together.
Exactly. And then also, once they do get divorced, you know, how do divorced singles cope and adjust? What are some of the lessons they learn? And then what needs to happen in order for them to recouple or remarry? So we really have, you know, a lot of information about marriage, divorce, and new love.
That's wonderful. Is there anything like this comparable? I haven't heard of it.
There really isn't. In the United States, this is the only study that has been following married couples for so long and continue to follow those individuals who got divorced. And so it's a really wonderful, rich study. I should also say that we compared the sample or group of married couples to national couples of who got married, either using census data or some other national data sets. And it looks like these 373 couples are very comparable, look a lot like all couples who got married in the 1980s and have continued to stay married, or those who got divorced from other people across the country.
Oh, that's nice to be able to confirm that they're representative in that way. So what were some of your main conclusions that you're drawing so far? Obviously, it's still ongoing, but what are your main conclusions at this point?
Well, as you said, this study is still ongoing, and I continue to analyze and continue to collect more information from these couples and individuals. We even send them anniversary cards and newsletters all the time. I have two books, popular books, that have come out based on these studies or based on these findings from these couples and divorced individuals. The first book looks at the happily married couples, and that book is called 5 Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great. And I think one of the main conclusions of this book or of the happily married couples is that it doesn't take hard work to really make a marriage last, a happy marriage last, but it does take regular, consistent work. So the happily married couples in my study say they do things regularly, often, consistently, to make sure that they're spouse knows that they care about them, that they're important, and that they don't take them for granted. And so I think that's one of the main conclusions for the happily married couples.
Oh, that's so valuable. One of our favorite stories is that we celebrate our anniversary every month, and it's just an opportunity to make it clear that we still appreciate each other ever more, actually. So that regularity, and you know, they often say marriage is hard work, but you can't just do it once a month or once a year.
Right.
That makes so much sense. So what kind of regular thing, like saying I love you or spending time together, or what does that look like, that regular, consistent work?
Well, there were two main themes, I think, in terms of that regularity, Randy. First was that the happily married couples in my study said that they did or said something regularly, almost daily, to make their partner feel cared for, special, and valued, and loved. And so when they're talking about saying something, they might, as you said, say, I love you every day, or thank you for being the best father, or the best husband, or the best mother. They might even say, I would still choose you if I had to do it all over again, or, you know, let's sit down and talk. So any phrase every single day that does what I call affirmation, validation, to make sure that your partner knows that you care about them and they're special, was very important. The other thing that goes in that same theme is doing something regularly to make sure your partner or spouse knows that you care about them and they're special. So you could give them a kiss or a hug before they go to work or when they come home. You could make their favorite dessert. You could put gas in their car. You could send them a greeting card in the mail. I mean, who doesn't love getting a greeting card in the mail that says, you know, you're special, you're wonderful, and I'm thinking about you, or even a voicemail. All of those are regular things that you can do so that your partner knows that you really care about them. And the second thing is that the happily married couples in my study said that they intimately know what makes their partner tick. They intimately know their partner. What I found is that most couples think they're talking or communicating with one another, but they're really doing what I call maintaining the household. They're talking about who's going to do the groceries or pick up the kids or call mom. What you want to do when you're really communicating is sharing your goals, your dreams, your stressors, what you want to do in the next 5 years. So those couples who are happy really every single day regularly ask questions about something other than their work, their partner's work, the family, the kids, their relationship, or finances or money-related concerns. And many people say, Randy, oh, no, what am I going to talk about? But there's so many other things to talk about. You know, where would you travel to if you won the lottery? What do you want to be in your next life? Sports, politics, all kinds of things. And those are the questions that you want to ask regularly, almost daily.
That's very cool. Like just even sharing what you heard on the news and how do you feel about it, and
absolutely
that kind of thing, rather than just who's going to pick up the kids today. So, did you actually give the couples feedback from what you were learning, or was it strictly gathering data?
For these couples, it was strictly gathering data. Now, in the newsletters that we send to the couples who are in the study, we tell them about general percentages, like how many couples have kids, or how many couples is the wife working outside the home. But we don't give any strategies to make their relationships better, or any strategies about what we're finding that leads to happiness or staying together or divorce, because we don't want to change the couple's relationships. So these couples are purely oriented toward collecting data.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. Obviously your conclusions are authentic that way. So did you see any major trends during that quarter of a century you've been watching these couples?
Well, I think one of the biggest trends is that those couples who add positive things to their relationships, or those couples who focus on the positive rather than the problems or the negatives in their relationships, are those couples who are happiest over time. And I think if you focus on the positive, the glass is half full, not half empty, so to speak, and you really strengthen what's already going well in your relationship, what I found is that motivates you to move forward, and that positivity actually rubs off on your partner and your relationship, as well as if you do get divorced. Those divorced singles who have a positive, hopeful, optimistic attitude toward their future and toward finding love again were actually the individuals who found new love again, who are significantly more likely to enter a new relationship and to be happy in that new relationship. So I think one of the biggest trends is that positivity and optimistic approach is so important and vital if you're in a relationship as well as if you're out of a relationship.
That's fascinating. We're coming up on a break, and I want to talk about why powerful men risk it all. And when we come back, we'll do that. But I want to ask just before the break, were there any surprises in your research? What was your biggest surprise?
I think the biggest surprise was that happy couples sweat the small stuff. And actually, that's so opposite, right, to what we hear in the media. But when we're talking about relationships, you need to pay attention and address the small issues, because if you don't, what I found is that they become bigger issues. What starts out as small, like he doesn't fill the dishwasher or she chews with her mouth open, start out small and seemingly insignificant, but if you don't address it, it becomes bigger and bigger over time. And over time then, when it becomes big, it's really hard to unpack. So what starts out small becomes, he doesn't love me, she doesn't listen to me, we're not right for one another. And at that point, it's really hard to change. You can, but it's harder. So I encourage couples, and the most surprising thing is to sweat the small stuff in your relationship.
That's a powerful idea. I know when I was in high school, I read a wonderful essay that said, never go to bed angry. And like I often say, we've been up late a couple of nights. but if something's, some stupid thing is bothering you, just share it before it festers.
Exactly. And when it festers, it affects you health-wise and it affects your relationship.
Exactly. So we're up on a break now. We're speaking with Dr. Terry Auerbach about why powerful men risk all. We've been sharing about her study of 26 years now of over 300 couples and following their lives, and some of them split up. And when we come back, we're going to ask about why powerful men like General David Petraeus and others risk career and family to have an affair. So stay tuned.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First, and I want to encourage you to call in if you have questions for Dr. Auerbach, 866-472-5792, and you can always go to my website, Randy Rolfe at randyrolfe.com. That's Randy with a Y. Rolfe is R-O-L-F-E, and there's some freebies on the website there, and I want to thank you. We have over 50,000 listeners every month, and so a lot of people are putting Family First. I really appreciate it. We're talking with Dr. Terry Auerbach, who's a PhD, best-selling author, professor, and popular love advisor, also known as the Love Doctor. And she's a psychologist, and she was director of a landmark 26-year government-funded study with the NIH of marriage and divorce. And we've been talking about her, some of her conclusions, and they're spelled out in her books, Finding Love Again, Six Simple Steps to a New and Happy Relationship, and Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great. And now we're going to focus in on exactly what goes wrong with prominent men who risk their family and career as the big news lately, of course, about General David Petraeus. And I wanted to find out what your insights on this case are, Dr. Terry.
Well, first, Randy, I should say and acknowledge that both men and women of all statures, ages, and races have affairs. And so adultery is not a new phenomenon, and it's definitely not only among powerful men. And in fact, if we look at current statistics, we find that about 20% of married women and 32%, up to 40% even in some studies of married men, admit to cheating or engaging in infidelity. But I do think that powerful men in particular have certain qualities, or there are certain traps that they fall into that jeopardize their marriage. And the first one that I would love your feedback on is what I call the illusion of invulnerability. I think oftentimes powerful men have affairs because they think they won't get caught. And I sort of call this the Superman phenomenon, that they do it because they think they can. And even if they believe that they might get in trouble, they think that they have the resources to cover it up. So they don't really worry about long-term effects or consequences of their actions. There's only short-term motivations or short-term gains that they focus in on, and they feel like they're invincible, so to speak.
Well, that certainly makes sense. When they have had so much success, they feel insulated, I guess, from the risks of normal people.
Yes, I do think that that's the case, and I think because they're able to maybe do things, other things, whether it be go to certain restaurants or fly certain places or get national attention, they feel that that carries through in all areas of their life. And I think the thing for powerful men and women to remember is that there is this public image that they have, but you want to remember that powerful men are just men and powerful women are just women, and that private selves are just normal, common individuals that have and, you know, worry and are concerned and experience the same things that we all do.
I see. So, somebody did ask me when I was telling them the topic of our show today. They said, well, okay, so they have an illusion of invulnerability, but that still doesn't say why do they go do it. I mean, this is why they don't stop themselves. But why do they go do it?
Well, I think they feel like they can. So they don't have the self-control. They don't worry about long-term consequences. I think everyone does things for the rewards that you can gain. And some of us think about the long-term rewards, and some of us think about the short-term rewards. Some of us think about the rewards, but then the costs are too high, so that when we weigh the costs or the negatives, they outweigh the rewards that we might get. I think powerful men are concerned about the short-term rewards, and they don't see the costs. So the rewards and the short-term costs, because of that invulnerability, because of that feeling of invincibility, the costs don't weigh in as much, and the costs don't outweigh the rewards. And so I think that is really a reason, or that motivates them. I mean, it's almost hedonistic-like, if you want to think about it, what, you know, self-gain, what's good for me, so to speak.
So you mentioned that in your books that these affairs rarely last. So that even makes less sense. It's not like they're finding the love of their life and they made a mistake the first time. They rarely last. So that seems like it's even more of a risk. But I guess that goes with what you're saying, that they're just looking for the short-term reward.
Exactly. You're only, or those individuals, not all powerful men, remember, but powerful men who do cheat are really focused on the short-term gains for them. So they're not thinking beyond that beginning reward, and they're not thinking about the costs or the risks long-term. I also think another reason, Randy, is that many powerful men have positions that require a lot of responsibility, authority, and risk-taking. And these men really perform well under high stress, and continually, I think, need and enjoy excitement or challenges to drive them forward. I like to call some of these powerful men, or these powerful men that cheat, adrenaline junkies or adrenaline-dependent men. And so an affair gives them that same type of exhilaration and excitement in their private life as they have in their professional life. So as soon as they accomplish something, or as soon as they end the stressful situation or the risk-taking activity, they're on to the next one. And I think an affair, infidelity, gives them that adrenaline or excitement. And again, this is not a rational behavior. This is acting on an immediate, short-term kind of excitement.
So it may be, that would be a situation where if someone's, you know, been a general overseas and they come home, they have a desk job, they're looking for excitement.
Exactly. Exactly. Or even if they have a job overseas and they come home for a little bit of time and they're going to go back overseas where it's exciting and they have authority and they have power and they're making big decisions, which is very stressful. When they're home, relaxed and calm, they may want a little bit of excitement because because they enjoyed that stress. They work well under stress, and that excitement is invigorating.
So you mentioned that there are really five reasons. We've talked about a couple, that they feel invulnerable and they are dependent on the adrenaline rush of the excitement of this taking that risk. What are some of the other reasons?
I think one of the third reasons, or the third reason, is that I think powerful men have a lot of opportunities for temptation. Many powerful men, because of wealth or fame or power, are traveling for long periods of time. And so they're separated from their partner or their spouse for a long period of time. And I want to make sure that people understand, or that your listeners understand, that separation alone, even for a short period of time, does not equal infidelity. But when you are separated for long periods of time, weeks, months on end, a lot of time, loneliness can set in. And loneliness, and as well as these ample opportunities for temptation for powerful men, that may be a lot of females adoring, wanting them, talking to them, saying that they're available, those things combined can trigger infidelity. Again, not always, but can trigger infidelity because they are feeling this loneliness. And we see this for powerful men. We also times see this for celebrities who, again, months on end are separated from their spouse. So ample opportunities for temptation along with separation from a spouse can trigger infidelity. Another reason is that I think a lot of powerful men are surrounded by people who protect them, who idolize them, and who sort of enable them to do things that aren't always so positive. And that was probably a nice way of saying that. But being surrounded by people who don't challenge your decisions, who don't give you honest feedback, or who are always protecting you from getting caught and sort of picking up after you, making excuses for you, can oftentimes encourage you and support your vices. And so I think having what I'd call these yes men or yes women around powerful men can oftentimes, again, trigger infidelity.
So they make it make them feel more invulnerable. No one's questioning their behavior, and they may be there to cover up for you. Makes it a lot easier to make these impulsive decisions.
Exactly. And that's, I think, you know, the fourth reason. And the fifth reason is that I think powerful men are still men, and usually an affair signals an internal need for change. So when a powerful man has an affair, cheats on his wife, something isn't right either in the man's life in general or in his relationship. So the affair creates the trigger for change. So there may be boredom or insecurity in the man's life. He isn't enjoying what he's doing. He's not feeling fulfilled. He isn't happy in general. There are other kinds of issues going on, psychologically, illness-wise, whatever it may be. Or something is occurring in the relationship. The relationship is going through a particularly difficult time. There's a relationship rut. The man isn't feeling fulfilled in his relationship or isn't getting the kind of affirmation that he needs. And again, I'm not suggesting at all that the partner is responsible, but what it signals is in the man himself, something isn't right, and that there is a change that's needed, either as an individual or in that particular relationship.
Yeah, so not saying that it's the wife's fault, but there's some lack of communication or lack of affirmation or just lack of time together that's leaving him perhaps more vulnerable than if he got his needs met, took his own actions to get his needs met, I would say.
Exactly. And, you know, a man can, obviously, should get his affirmation needs met elsewhere as well. I mean, men should have friends that he goes out with that think he's special, that validate him. He should have his own interests. He should get fulfilled at work. He should go to his family and talk. So men need to be responsible for their own needs and need to get their affirmation needs met elsewhere. But what it signals is that something isn't going right in that man's life or that relationship.
Right. Okay. So that's those five reasons powerful men cheat. Now, what do you mean by blind spots? That they just have blind spots when it comes to actually looking at, like, what are my needs, or why do I feel lonely, or why do I feel like chasing some groupie? Why don't they be more introspective?
Well, I think in general, when people are not they're thinking inside themselves, when they're not doing that, when they're not analyzing their behaviors, I think two things are going on. Either they're so self-absorbed, and when powerful men are in these powerful positions, making those big decisions, as we were talking about, in very stressful situations, oftentimes they're not thinking about others. They really are very self-absorbed with themselves, and so they have a difficult time going beyond themselves. It's that hedonistic, short-term gains, not thinking about the effect on others, not thinking about the long-term effects. And I think, second, oftentimes what happens is that we don't have the mechanisms, the strategies to be able to do that. I think what happens in our society oftentimes is that people have a difficult time knowing and being able to communicate with a partner effectively and constructively. We don't require lessons on how to have relationships. We don't give people the skills when they do get married, how to talk to one another, how to be calm when you hear something that your partner is telling you is annoying them. We don't teach individuals how to not take things personally. We don't teach individuals how to even be open and honest if something is bothering them. So powerful men also don't have those skills. Just because they know how to do it in a business sense does not mean they also know how to communicate effectively in their personal lives.
And that's so true, and so people are so concerned today that some of the younger people are all they know is texting and immediately reacting, and are learning even less about how to be calm and communicate and find out what's going on for the other person. So we're up on a break, and so listen in for Dr. Terry Orbuch. We'll be back in a moment.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you.
The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're speaking with Terry Arbuck, who's the love doctor. She's a best-selling author and professor and popular love advisor on TV, radio, and the web. And she's nationally known for her research with the NIH, a 25-year study, 26 years now, of marriage and divorce. And she's also at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan and an Oakland University professor. And we're talking about what makes powerful men, like the story of General David Petraeus, risk all to have an affair. And so we've shared the five reasons that they tend to get in trouble. And I'd like to ask Dr. Arbuck, powerful men, as you mentioned, say they face more temptations, but we tend to think that like a general or someone in power should have more self-discipline rather than less. So can you address that counterintuitive observation?
Well, I think we have to remember, as I said, Randy, that powerful men are men and that what they do in their professional and work lives it may not translate into their professional or personal lives. I mean, none of us are perfect and none of us have perfect relationships. Many people even ask me, you've been doing all of this research, Dr. Terry, on marriage and divorce, and you study it, you do counseling. You should have then a perfect marriage. And my comment always back to them is, nobody has a perfect marriage, even me. And yes, I know a lot about marriage and divorce and keeping your marriage happy and satisfied. And if divorced, how you can find new love again. But all of that information doesn't mean that it's easy for me to do it all in my marriage. And no marriage is perfect. All marriages, all relationships have ups and downs. And so we want to remember that even powerful men have concerns. They're not perfect. They have temptations. They're not able to control themselves. They have self-discipline issues. Some are really good at controlling it. And I think we don't hear enough about powerful men who can have that self-discipline. I mean, the media wants to pick up on the ones that don't. I mean, I think that is in general what the media does, is pick up on the instances or situations where it's not good. But we want to remember that many do have self-discipline.
Yeah, that's such an important point, because we hear about the aberrations, the incidents, the weaknesses of our powerful people. And you have to buy books and read biographies of the people who have greater self-discipline. You have to search a little harder than just the local headline. That's so true. So certainly the women in the Petraeus scandal took risks as well. You know, Paula Broadwell and Jill Kelly, and their marriages are involved as well. So tell us a little more. Do you find a difference between women and men, and powerful or influential women? Is there a difference in the way they handle these kinds of opportunities and temptations?
Well, I think in general, first, that women don't cheat as much as men. And, you know, although powerful women surely cheat, as we know, as you mentioned in this situation, we just don't hear about it as much in the media as we hear about powerful men. I'm not sure, Randy, exactly why that is the case. Perhaps men aren't attracted or drawn to the same qualities of wealth or celebrity or the influence as women are in men. Perhaps men are more discreet than women are when they're having the affair with the powerful men, or they talk less about the affair to their male friends. And perhaps the media is more protective of powerful women, because they are, you know, more vulnerable, or there just are fewer powerful men in the United States. I mean, I'm sorry, fewer powerful women in the United States. So we also know, Randy, that men and women have affairs for different reasons as well. When we talk to men, one of the main reasons they give for having an affair is, I wasn't getting the attention, or I wasn't getting the affirmation from my partner that I felt I deserved, and I was getting it then from someone else, and that felt good. When we talk to women, then one of the main reasons they give for having an affair, whether it be powerful women or non-powerful women, they talk about a connection. They talk about bonding. They talk about communication and intimacy in a relationship. And when they feel that that isn't going well, when they're not connecting emotionally, when they're not communicating, then they feel like they want to communicate and have that bond with someone else. So there are lots of differences when we talk about infidelity, whether it be for men and women in general, or powerful men versus powerful women.
That's very, very interesting. So the women might want a more, not a one-night stand as much, that kind of thing, and may not have so many of that groupy culture as a powerful man.
And also, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but also, you know, there are different kinds of affairs. There are emotional affairs and there are sexual affairs. You know, sometimes an emotional affair is where you become really close to this other person and you feel connected and intimate with them, and you're sharing things with them that you're not sharing with your spouse, but there's no sex involved. And then there's the sexual affair. So we also have to remember that there are different kinds of affairs. There are one-night stands, as you said, and there are long-term affairs.
That makes a lot of sense. It's something to look out for, because emotional affairs can pull a marriage apart just like a sexual affair. Isn't that true?
Exactly. Absolutely. And, you know, men and women can have emotional affairs, but what your partner or spouse should be is your primary confidant. It doesn't have to be your only source of support or person you talk to at all. But if you had a medical scare, if you lost your job, if something happened that was traumatic, if you would go to everyone else but your spouse, that's not good. So absolutely, emotional affairs can jeopardize marriages just as much as sexual affairs.
Yeah, that's a really important point. So what would be your recommendations for powerful men to help them become more aware, recognize their humanity, and realize they may not be able to exercise the same authority and power in hiding affairs as they would running a country or leading an army?
Well, good question. I think first, communication is so important with your spouse. And that even though you may be in a different country or even though you may be gone for long periods of time, to use technology to your advantage. I mean, we talked about young adults using technology too much. I would encourage powerful men or all individuals who are away from their spouse to use technology to their advantage. Use Skype, web cameras, text, phone, write. There are so many ways that you can use technology to continue to communicate, to continue to be a vital part of that person's life and them of yours. Also, remember that to share the details of your daily life with this other person. Oftentimes, I think powerful men or powerful men in general, powerful people in general think that their lives are so complicated, so stressed, that they can't share those details with their partner or spouse. And I would encourage them to try to do that. Share some of that daily life experience because that connects you to your spouse, to your partner, and that other person is craving those details, wants to be included. I mean, anytime you exclude or don't include your partner in the small details of your life, that creates mistrust and jealousy and betrayal again. So try to do that as much as possible. And then finally, I think you want to remember that we all have a public self and a private self, and that you may get the attention and affirmation and attraction from other people in your public life, but then remember and be realistic that you're going to have the same problems as everyone else in your private life, and you're going to have the same ups and downs, the same issues, the same concerns, the same lack of excitement. And so pay attention and do regular things like we were talking about at the beginning to show your partner that you're there, to make sure that your relationship is exciting and valuable.
That makes so much sense, Dr. Auerbach. I wanted to ask you a question about the public. Does the idealization of these prominent figures actually add to their sense of invulnerability? Are Americans just too interested in the lives of these stars, as it were?
I guess I would say, Randy, that all of us are too concerned about other people in general. Whether it be the celebrities, the powerful people, our neighbors, or our friends, I think we pay attention too much to others. When we have a concern in our relationship, we think it is unique. We think it is only our concern, and so we look to others to see, are people having the same problems? Are celebrities, having a difficult time communicating, having affairs as well? And instead, I would encourage us to look inward rather than outward. Look inward and try to ask yourself, do I have realistic expectations of relationships and my partner? Am I voicing and telling my partner my needs and my concerns? If a partner doesn't know our needs and concerns, they can't meet them. If our partner doesn't know what's in our head and in our heart, they can't address them. And so instead of doing this outward focus, have an inward focus.
Oh, I think that's such a great suggestion. I know people often, you can just turn on the TV or the internet and find out if other people are having the same problems you are, instead of just going and solving your own problems or working them through with your spouse. That's such a great insight. So can you tell us quickly about your books, The Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great? That's about the marriages that are working. And then the other book, Finding Love Again, about people who get divorced. Obviously, we don't have time to go into all those simple steps, but how can our listeners get a hold of them and give us a quick summary, if you could.
Well, both of the books, as I mentioned, are based on my long-term research study on marriage, divorce, and new love. So it's all about the findings of the couples in my study. And there are quizzes and exercises, percentages, strategies that the couples use to stay happy or find new love. But it reads well, it's interesting to read. It's not too scientific at all. Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great, as we mentioned, is all about the happy couples in this study. And the simple things, not grandiose things, not big things, but simple, very regular attention kinds of exercises that they did to make their relationship happy. And I think it's a book that's easy to read, as I said, accessible and fun. I do have some fun stories as well from the couples in the study. And Finding Love Again, Six Simple Steps to a New and Happy Relationship, again, is all research science based, and it's based on the divorced singles in my study, how they coped and adjusted and what they did.
Dr. Terry Arbuck, we're at the end of the show already, and so we can get these books at Amazon or anywhere else, right?
That's right. Any bookstore online or in your local neighborhood.
And do you have a website you'd like to refer people to?
My website is Dr. Terry, D-R-T-E-R-R-I, thelovedoctor.com. All one word, Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being guests. We've shared so many wonderful insights. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Great. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.